Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 74 for December the 9th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through all this magical world of servers, networks, fiber optics, switches, and all things connected. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please check out all the great tech shows at techpodcast.com. Also, if you want to pick us up on your smartphone, it's very easy to do that. You can find us at Stitcher.com. That's S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.com. And you'll also find many other podcasts there. Not only related to tech, they cover all kind of podcasts. Download the app to your smartphone today and check out Stitcher for all of your shows. Folks, please check out my website if you have a chance to do so. You can do that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave me a voice message or question or whatever you might want to call in with. You can do that at 724-701-0550. Once again, that number is 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or future ideas for future shows, you can email those to me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, please follow me on Twitter and as at Technoman. Folks, I want to first relay to you that this week I finally canceled and I cut my ties with Spreaker.com. Now, Spreaker.com, there's some great shows on there, but we just couldn't come to a we couldn't get our heads together, and I was wanting something that they didn't want to provide. What I wanted was, you know, they have a show that I was paying for. It was $40 a year for a 45-minute show. But when I do these shows, sometimes it runs over. Well, if your show runs over, what happens is it just cuts you off, and it quits broadcasting. Also, what I was hoping for Spreaker.com, I was hoping a lot of you folks would listen live. But, you know, we live in a world of DVRs, recordings, podcasts. These shows are meant to listen to them on your time, right? Not on our time. We may be the producers and the talent of the show. We might be bringing you these topics, but I know you like to listen to them when you want to listen to them, and I do the same thing. So what I was asking Spreaker for, though, was to come up with, they have another plan, a three-hour show package, but that would cost you, I think it was almost $200 a year. And I didn't want to pay that much. So I said, look, if you would charge me $100 a year and give me an hour and a half, then I think we could meet in the middle. But they never created that package. So this show is no longer carried on Spreaker. And if you're a listener, hopefully you came over and you found these shows on iTunes, on techpodcast.com, or on Stitcher. I think we produce these in enough different places now you can pick them up. I don't have to worry about paying that extra fee to that company. So that's why we're no longer with Spreaker.com. Folks, tonight's show, we're going to be talking about some facts about running cable. I don't think this is covered enough in any server podcast out there, so I thought I would include it tonight in this show. And I once had an intern, and I had them running cable for me, and you know, I came up the stairs, and I was listening to this guy complaining, one of the interns. And what he was complaining about, he goes, well, I can't believe Jack is making us run cable. This is not what I went to school for 2 years for technology. I didn't go to school to run cable. I said, look, you know, this is part of the business, right? You can't connect computers together unless you have some kind of cable in between them. Even if you're running, and these guys were actually hanging wireless access points. And he goes, well, this is wireless technology. I said, well, even with wireless, you have to plug it in somewhere. And, you know, he was just really, really taken back that I was making them run cable. Well, folks, running cable, terminating it, punching it down, that's all part of what we do as technologists. You have to be able to do that to connect your computers together, to get this stuff all working, right? we don't want to have this out there and people can't connect computers. I mean, you could be the best hardware guy in the world. And granted, we've had a lot of hardware people in our industry. We have a lot of hardware interns come through and they do a wonderful, wonderful job working on the hardware and fixing it. We've had people come in that wanted to set up, like WDS. They wanted to build a imaging server and set all that up. Well, that's wonderful also. You know, that could be needed. But still, folks, if you can't connect a computer to another computer, why are you in this business, right? It's just not the place to be. Now, I understand. We also teach a class now. We teach a hardware class. And when we teach this hardware class, we're teaching it to a group of programming students. Okay, so the students are taking programming, but we're teaching them hardware. And, you know, sometimes if you're a programmer, understand that you're not going to be in that realm of fixing computers. We're worrying about what's in them. And we need programmers in this world. I mean, really, we really, really need programmers. And it's been proven if you look down through history, when, you know, IBM told Microsoft that, you know, we're not really worried about the software side of things because there's no money in software. It's all in the hardware. Well, IBM was drastically wrong at that point, and we know that software makes a ton of cash. So we do need programmers out there. And if you are a programmer, then bless you. I know I've written a lot of programs myself. I've sold a lot of programs throughout the world. But that is not my day-to-day cup of tea. I'm more of a hardware guy, and I love networking, firewalls, switches, and building circuits and building VLANs. I enjoy that aspect of the technology world. As I said, you can't know everything about this business, but you can know a little bit about each piece that can make your life a lot easier. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about cable. Now, why are we going to be talking about cable? I'll get into that in just about 3 minutes here. But the first thing we're going to talk about is Cat 6 cable. Now, I was asked the other day, well, Jack, what's the difference between Cat 5 and Cat 6? Cat 6 is one better, right? Because it's one more than 5. Well, that's probably not a true statement. The truth is, Cat 6 has more shielding, more twists, and apparently you can go a little bit further, just a little bit further than what you can with Cat 5. It still has the 8 conductors in it. We know this. It still connects just like the Cat 5 wire does. But it's also, Cat 6 also has a little bit more strengthening in it. So it's a little bit stronger wire. Anyway, we want to talk first of all about the maximum length of Cat 6 cable. And if you're not into Cat 6, that's okay. Hang in there with me because we're going to be talking about fiber optics also. 1 gig versus 10 gig. And I'm going to fill you in a little bit about that because we've been doing a lot of that at work right now. We've been doing a lot of planning at work, trying to figure this out of how we're going to go from 1 gig to 10 gig. So the maximum length of Cat 6 cable is 328 feet. Now, 328 feet is the maximum length. We know that most Cat 5 cable comes in a box, a big box, and I just ordered one, so I know. It comes in a 1,000-foot box. So we would have people out there that believes that if it comes in the box, you can probably string 1,000 feet and be just fine. This is not true. Now, I'm going to give you a story from the trenches. We all like these stories, right? Something that I actually did in the past, and I want to bring it to the table tonight and discuss it with you folks. So one time, we had to run a Cat 6 cable, and the run was well over 320 feet. It was probably closer to 500, almost 600 feet of Cat 6 cable. Now, already right now, you're saying, Jack, it's not going to work. Listen to my story, and I'll tell you how we fixed it up. Now, first of all, why did we do this? Let me give you some backstory to this. I was working one day in one of our buildings, and I was connected or remoted into one of my servers in the other building. And what happened was it came up and said connection lost. I started scratching my head, started wondering a little bit, thinking, well, how was the connection lost? I mean, what did I do that would make the connection lost? So as I was looking at it and thinking about, okay, well, I'll just reconnect to my server. That happens. So I tried to reconnect, and it said connection and not found. You couldn't remote into the servers. You couldn't connect across the street. Then all of a sudden, my cell phone lit up. I started getting calls about people not being able to connect to their, you know, their server drives, not being able to get out on the internet, and a lot of problems like that you would start thinking about. Something happened to the connectivity between you and the other building. So we were having, at that time, there was a new driveway getting put in. Well, the excavators that was grinding down the blacktop, the old blacktop, what happened was the guy was running a bulldozer with a bucket on the front, and he was scraping the old parking lot off. And as he lifted the bucket, there was a ting, a snap, if you will. And the snap just happened to be my underground fiber optic cable. Now, at that time, it was, I believe, might have been a six-pair cable. So that would give you, what, three possible runs, transmit and receive. So there were six pairs in there, and they were snapped. And the only reason I knew this is because I got a call and said, hey, I think there was a wire that was just broke up here in the parking lot. When I went upstairs and I went out to the parking lot, I met with the bulldozer driver, and he's sitting there, and it was almost like, you know, talking to a five-year-old. I didn't do it. I didn't do that. I don't know who did. I said, wait, were you driving the bulldozer? Yes. Were you the one that picked the bucket up in the air? Yes. Well, then you were the one that snapped the line. Now, I learned a lot about wiring that day. I learned a lot about underground cabling, and I'm going to give you some of that backstory about how you should actually bury underground cable when you're going across the roadway. So anyway, what happened was we lost all connectivity. Well, there was no way. I immediately called our fiber contractor and had him come out, and there was no way to splice his cable. The way it was broken, the way the glass was shattered in the cable, there was no way you can pull it far enough across to be able to splice it to even make it work. So I started thinking. I said, all right, now we had a couple guys working with me. And I said, all right, guys, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go across the street. We're going to plug into our network switch in the main switching room. We're going to come and pull that out of a window. And we're going to take that across a walkway. We're going to go across a couple lawns. We went to get it over the road so these bulldozers and these big trucks can get through. We pulled the cable up a flagpole. So it was hanging up a flagpole. Back down the other side, back across the roof to the other building, and then we found a ventilation shaft. We went in through the ventilation shaft. Now, this is all just with Cat 6 cable. We went in through the ventilation shaft, and we came down. We came into one of the main rooms in the secondary building. We went back through. We pulled the wire through some doorways, around some desks, down the hall, and we plugged it into one of our switches. And I thought, now we have connectivity between the two buildings. Well, we started to experience just a little bit of a problem. And a little bit of a problem was there was a ton of drop packets. People could not work. We had a lot of problems. So I started looking at it. I said, look, guys, we need to figure out a way that we can boost the signal for this Cat 6 cable. So what I had them do was we went back to where we pulled it into the secondary building. We snipped the line off. We put an RJ45 on it, and we put an RJ45 on the other end. And what I did was I put just a 10-100 switch, not a hub. I put a switch into that room, and I boosted that signal up to get that signal a little bit more powerful to go across the street. At that point, we had full connectivity, and everything was working well. So can you run Cat 6 cable further than 328 feet in my experiences? Yes, you can. Now, what you need to do that when you do this little trick is you have to remember somewhere in the back of your mind, if you ever need to do this, put a switch in line somewhere. As soon as you get to the secondary building or as soon as you get to the secondary spot where you're dropping that cable, put a switch in there to kind of boost that signal up so you can get that to go across the street. So at that point, let me see here where we were. So we used, like I said, we used a switch and we activated a booster. So how did we know that we were dropping packets? You know, have you ever tried to figure out your network? And believe me, I know. I've been doing this for so long that I always say, if it's not broke, don't touch it, don't fix it. Because if it's not broke, leave it alone. But with networks, with the bandwidth that we're using today and what we're expected to provide the end user, we have to reevaluate our networks over and over and over. This is a constant battle. Every year, I look at new ways to rebuild my backend network, new ways to advance it, new ways to make it better. This past year, we started putting in all of the Meraki Cisco wireless gear. Folks, Meraki is amazing. They were amazing before Cisco bought them, and they're still just as amazing today. The reason that Cisco, and I talked to the Meraki guys, because I met them when it was just Meraki, and the reason that they wanted Cisco to buy into their company was because they wanted bigger reaches to sell their gear. Because Meraki was not a well-known company, right? It was very small. It was formed by just a few guys, like a lot of companies are formed today. And they built this really, really unique, powerful wireless radio. And with this wireless radio, they built this very, very unique, very, very, very sophisticated web interface that you use to manage all your Meraki gear. And let me tell you, if you're in education, if you're working in education, and you are using a Apple server to manage your iPads, then folks, I believe you're still sitting in the 1960s or 70s. You need to advance yourself, sign up for a free Meraki account, and it'll always be free because I talked to them, and take those iPads, put a policy on them from the Meraki controller online, and folks, you can push out all your apps, you can buy apps, and everything wirelessly. No more syncing to a Mac server that is totally, to me, it's very, very, and I love Apple, and I'm a Mac guy. I think Macs are, you know, they have their place in the world. But their server side and their syncing abilities are, at this point, you know, kind of almost historical, I would say. Antiquated, I like to use. I love that word, antiquated, in our field. They, you know, one time you had to do it that way. But now with Meraki, we can actually push out apps and they go right to the devices. We don't have to even have to see the devices. We don't have to pull them back or anything. So Meraki is huge that way. But even without the Meraki stuff, if you use it as your wireless controller, it is totally amazing. Absolutely amazing stuff. So check that out, Meraki. It's Meraki.com. You want to check them out? So anyway, that's why I reevaluate my back-end networking. So last year was the wireless. This year we're reevaluating and we're looking at our switching. And the reason I'm looking at my switching is because I want to make sure I don't lose packets. Because there's two things in the world. One thing I said the other day was, there's one thing in the world that's for sure, is that we will never use less storage. I know this because we just had to order a new backup server. I mean, this is huge. So you'll never use less storage in your network. You're always going to need more. In your network, you'll never need less bandwidth. You're always going to need more. That's just the way it is. You're always going to need more bandwidth. So that's something to think about there. So we're re-evaluating this back end. So, but how would you know, first of all, to even evaluate your network? What would you use to evaluate your network? The program that I used is Wireshark. Now, Wireshark is great because you can plug into a switch and you can watch the packets moving across your wire. Now, what you need to do, first of all, is send some packets. And the best way to do this when you're using Wirecast is you can set Wirecast up and filter it based on ports, and you can filter it based on the type of traffic you're looking for. You can even filter it based on IP address ranges of where you want to follow these packets. So narrow it down the best you can. So what I would do is narrow down from your receiver. So if it's another computer in another building, another part of your building you're in, maybe it's upstairs and you're downstairs, and you're trying to catch the packets going back and forth. You get that IP address, and then you get the IP address from the computer that you're sending and receiving from. And to do a proper ping, don't just do ping and then the address and enter. Do a ping, do the address, do space, slash T. That will keep that ping continuing so you can watch it, right? Because when it pings three times and times out, that's no good. You're not going to capture enough packets to really know what's going on. So you can capture a ping by using the slash T and getting a continuous ping, and then watch that over Wireshark. Now, if you want to monitor your traffic all the time, and again, this is getting to building your network up, what you need to do, and this is what we did, you go to your main switch, and by the main switch, I'm saying the last switch before your last hop, or it would be your last hop, until you get to your firewall or your router that you're going out of the network with. What you're going to do is take a port on there. So let's say we have port 1. Usually port 1 is what you're going to plug into to send all your traffic out of. And then I took port number, I think it was whatever, it could be whichever one, 15. Go into that switches, it has to be a managed switch. Go into the switches configuration and mirror port number 1. When you do that, you plug your computer in that you have Wireshark on, and you're mirroring that port. So what you're doing is you're allowing yourself to capture all of the traffic going out and coming in that one port. This is a great way to monitor traffic. If you have somebody that continuously loses packets, in other words, they say they click on something and nothing happens. They click on again, nothing happens. They click on again, something does happen. Well, there could be a loss of packets somewhere. At that point, you may want to go to their machine and put Wireshark on their machine and watch those packets as they're going out, seeing if they're getting to their destination or are they dying on that end. It's something to really think about and put it in your head. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of hardware tools out there you can plug in your network and watch packets and stuff go through, but this is a great little tool, Wireshark. It's one of those, I'm pretty sure it's still free. And I'm not going to quote that on the show for sure, but I'm pretty sure it's still free, and it works absolutely perfect for what you want to do and monitor your traffic. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about, is there a better way to run long distances? And today's world, we know that it's fiber optics. There's two types of fiber optics, and I've been doing a lot of research in this lately because we're getting ready to do this build out, and I have to know exactly what I'm talking about when I'm putting this together with the engineers. So we have two different types of fiber optics. We have a multi-mode and a single mode. Now, a multi-mode is 50-dash and 62.5-dash micron cable. Multi-mode cable has a large diameter core and a multi-pathways of light. It comes in two core sizes, 50 micron and 62.5 micron. Multimode fiber optic cable can be used in most general data and voice fiber applications, such as bringing fiber to the desktop, which I've never done that one, adding segments to an existing network, and in smaller applications such as alarm systems. Both 50 and 62.5 micron cable feature the same cladding diameter as or of 125 microns, but 50 micron fiber cable features a smaller core, and that's the light carrying portion of the fiber. Now, although both of these cables can be used in the same way, a 50 micron cable is recommended for the premise applications, backbone, horizontal, and intra-building connections, and should be considered for any new construction and installations. Both also use either LED or laser light sources. The big difference between the two is that 50 micron cable provides longer lengths and or higher speeds, particularly in the 850 nm wavelength. Single mode is 8 to 10 micron cable. Single mode cable has a small 8 to 10 micron glass core and only one pathway of light. With only a single wavelength of light passing through its core, single mode cable relines the light toward the center of the core instead of simply bouncing it off the edges of the core as multimode does. Single mode cable provides 50 times more distance than multimode cable. Consequently, single mode cable is typically used in long haul network connections spread out over extended areas, including cable television and campus backbone applications. Telcos use it for connections between switching offices. Single mode cable also provides higher bandwidth, so it can use a pair of single mode fiber strands, full duplex, for up to twice the throughput of multi-mode fiber. So now let's just recap on that just for a quick second. If you didn't catch that all, I know that was a mouthful to say there, so I'm sure it was a mouthful to hear. Multimode cable is just that. When you look at a multimode cable, there is two strands. There's two different pathways, and I often refer to it as a transmit and receive. There's a transmit going out, and then there's a pathway bringing that, bringing the signal or the data back, right? That's multi-pathways. And we know now that if we want to use higher speeds or longer lengths, then we should use 50 micron cable. Now, why is that important? Well, because if you have anybody running fiber optics for you in your network, or you have anybody thinking about putting stuff in for you hiring a contractor, ask them, is this going to be 50 micron cable? If not, then you don't want it. You don't want 62.5, because what's going to happen later on is you're going to be wanting to take your 1 gig fiber and you're going to switch it out and you want to put 10 gig GBICs in so you can raise your fiber speed to 10 gigs. This is very interesting stuff, because when we had our network refibered and reran, we never asked. Luckily for us that the company was on top of things, the one we hired to contract our fiber, and they did put 50 micron cable in. So that's huge for us. Now let's talk a little bit about single mode cable. So single mode cable can be used for longer distances. And right now we're working at, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, we have a cable company bringing new internet services to our little, I don't know, it's not a village. We don't live in Alaska here. We don't live in, you know, an Indian tribe village. But it's bringing it to us, our small neighborhood. So I live in a rural area, and we have a small neighborhood that's not really in the country. I mean, we have, you know, electric, we have city water, city sewage, you know, we have all that stuff. But we are using satellite TV. Now, we have a local cable company here that's providing me with 5 megabytes of internet down and 2 megabytes of internet up. Well, I was talking to another local cable provider, and in talking to that cable provider, he struck up a deal with me because he knows I produce these shows and do some live stuff on the internet. And we got talking, and he said, well, I wonder if I could bring you 100 meg internet. Would you be interested? And I said, interested? I about fell over backwards. And I mean, I almost had a heart attack that day. I said, I would be overwhelmed. I would sell it to everybody in my small town. I said, everybody will buy into your network if you can bring it here. Now, what he's going to do is he is bringing in single mode fiber. And he told me just that. He said, Jack, with the, you know, with the invention of single mode fiber, the price has come way down. They're able to run it. And they're running this stuff almost probably somewhere around 15 miles. Now, I'm sure they're boosting the signal along the way to bring it here. But the thing is, they're going to have a pure fiber connection between me and his network over that great distance that it is. And we're also going to be getting not only internet through that fiber, he's also providing cable TV, so cable television, and telephone, all through one fiber line. Folks, this is huge. How many, you know, when I owned my internet service and we did dial-up internet, we had 100-pair cable pulled into our internet offices. Now, 100-pair, that gave us 100 phone lines. And it didn't take too long before we kind of ran out of that. And I had to call the phone company and ask for another 100-pair. And the people, the linesman that brings that stuff to your offices, they were not happy with me because they had to do a lot more underground work. Now, let's talk about underground work. I told you earlier about my little story about the fiber being broken. I told you about underground work and how we're going to tie this into this little story tonight. So after our fiber line was broken, the true way to put your fiber optics underground is you need to have a certain type of mentality, I guess it is. You have to try to think about the person that's going to be digging up that parking lot or digging up that roadway again someday. And you got to think about, what are they going to do if they hit something? Now, we know just by watching the news what happens when people hit a body, right? You see that sometimes. They dig it up. Oh, my God, there's an old body buried here. You know, they find bones and they stop right away. So what the guy told me was when we hired a company to come out and put this new fiber underground, and this time they run, I think they ran a 20 strand, if I'm not mistaken. I think there's 20 pairs in there that we can use now. to interconnect the building, which thank goodness, because putting cameras and everything on top of that and your phones, we need a lot more fiber than six strands. So it was kind of a good thing that it happened, I guess, in the long run. So what he told me is you have to dig a trench. First of all, you dig down below, way below the frost line. So you have to get your fiber deep is the first thing you're going to do. You want to go below. You don't just want to go dig a trench down into your current blacktop and put it down because it's going to get cut. That's just the way it is. What he wanted to do was, since the roadway was no longer there, he dug down through the dirt and went down below that frost line. They laid a concrete trench down first. So they laid concrete down. And then they took steel piping, solid steel piping, and put that in as conduit, put the fiber through that, and then they take concrete now and they build basically, like, if you can envision this in your head, just close your eyes for a minute and think about a tent. Remember like the old pup tents we used to sleep in as kids? They would take that and they tented it over top. They take concrete and they tented it over top of that pipe. And I asked the guy when I was watching him put this in, because they were doing a lot of work to get fiber optics back together, right? And I was like, why did you do that? And he said, well, Jack, the reasoning is when the bulldozers come across that, and if somebody hits that, they're going to know they hit something really, really hard. I mean, folks, there's a ton of concrete on my fiber now. He says, and they're going to hit that, and bam, they're going to hit something really, really hard. And they're going to stop and investigate. And they'll see that it's clearly marked. He even marked it across the top. They painted across the top fiber optics on that concrete, even though it's going to be underground. Because if it gets dug up one day, people are going to know that's where our fiber optics is. And then a little word of advice for you. If you have any plans or any drawings of your buildings, if you have any drawings of your grounds, where your roadways are, you know, your driveways or whatever, make sure you mark on there clearly where the fiber lines are. So when people are looking, people should look at that before they do any digging on your property, and they'll be able to see that of where that fiber line is laying. So that's how they put it in, and that's my little story there. Now, I was going to get into a lot of stuff tonight, but we're going to just talk a little bit about the push to 10 gig Ethernet is on. I told you earlier that you'll never use less bandwidth. That's just the way life is. You know, we're not going to use less. If we did, we would still be using 14.4 dial-up modems. Why do I know about 14.4 dial-up modems? Because I sold dial-up internet. And we actually started with 2800 baud modems. So I started that company many, many years ago. And when I was building that company, we went from 288, baud modem to a 14.4. And then we went to the 64, whatever, what was the next one? 64K modem or something? I can't remember. At that point, we had to put in digital switches and digital server racks. We had to get PRI lines. They didn't use phone lines anymore, so we used primary relay interface lines, which were kind of cool because for every card we had in that rack, we can have 10 dial-up lines with every PRI line. I think that, if I remember correctly, that's the way it works. Again, don't quote me on that. But anyway, today the push for 10 gigabit Ethernet is on. Folks, 10 gigabit Ethernet. Now, with the ratification of the standard expected for this summer, vendors are ready to hit the market with the electronics that will power it. But the question is, are end users and the fiber that they have installed ready for it? Well, folks, we talked about the fiber a little bit ago, and we said if it was 50 micron fiber, then it is ready for 10 gigabit. You can push 10 gigabit over that. Why do I know that? Because I just worked with some engineers redesigning some back-end networking stuff. And with the engineers on the phone, that was the first question they asked me. Is it 50 micron? And would that be ready to go for the 10 gigabit? So we checked. We said, yep. And they said, you're ready to go. So all we got to do is buy new switches that will take the GBICs. Now, if you've never seen a GBIC, and I'm sure there's a lot of other terminologies, that's what we call them. It's the connector, it's the transceiver that plugs into the switch that the fiber optics plugs into. So instead of a Cat5 cable, you now have a fiber optic patch, basically, and you plug it into that thing. And that does all the electronics and all the back-end work to increase your fiber speed. So as long as your switch can handle it, as long as your fiber can handle it, you can take your 1 gig GBIC out, put a 10 gig in, plug in, you now have a 10 gig fiber connection. Now, some argue that the backbone systems are not ready for plug and play right now. If they have fiber in their network, they probably are ready for some kind of 10 gig Ethernet. but they're not sure what kind of 10 gigabit Ethernet. That doesn't really make sense. It's either you do or you don't. But others in the cable industry say it might not be that simple. Many in-building backbone systems are wired for multi-mode fiber, which some say is not ideal for 10 gigabit Ethernet and will lead to attenuation, depression, and other problems. Now, those who have purchased multi-mode media in anticipation for 10 gigabit Ethernet may have been better off installing both single-mode and multi-mode fibers in their backbones. So there's another good key point for you there. If you're rebuilding your backbone, if you have not put any fiber optics in your network yet, start thinking about that. Think, okay, well, I listen to Jack's show. You know, I pay attention to tips from the server room. And we're going to reevaluate this, and we're going to put single mode in. Matter of fact, the last vendor we had in, we were looking at putting some TVs on our network. And you have to, well, TVs today, folks, run over fiber, right? They don't run too much over cable anymore. It's just another way they bring it into you. So they asked if we can run single mode fiber between the buildings. Well, that's kind of hard now that that conduit's under the ground and I don't even know how to get to it to run any more cable through it because it was kind of a in-place thing. So I said, well, probably not. Not that I know of anyway. I mean, so we'll have to evaluate that and see. But they wanted single mode fiber for cable TV. They said, one, because like we talked about earlier, it's better for long distances, and two, it doesn't have any signal drop with the single mode because of the single light source. Now, as a high-speed unifying technology of networking applications in LANs and WANs, 10 gigabit Ethernet is designed to provide simple, high bandwidth at low cost. In MAN and WAN applications, it will enable service providers and others to create extremely high-speed, long-distance Ethernet links at a very competitive cost. As a backbone technology, 10 gig Ethernet can connect multiple LANs. So that said, it will certainly appeal to critical information companies and organizations that are typically first in line for leading-edge technologies, such as colleges, medical facilities, financial institutions, for example. But for now, however, the cost of running 10 gig Ethernet to the desktop is prohibitive for general use. Now, folks, I don't even know how many of you out there I would really like to hear, and I put these questions out there to my listening audience, you folks listening to these shows, and I never get any response, but I'm going to put this out there anyway. Is anybody running fiber optics to the desktop? You know, that is what I would love to know. Is anybody out there running fiber optics to the desktop? We are not. We looked at it a long time ago, and the networking cards that I needed for the workstations itself was just too costly. I couldn't justify the price. I mean, I'm running gigabit Ethernet, through copper, through Cat6 to the workstation from my switches, and to me, that's really good. Where I'm looking at 10 gigabit Ethernet is interconnecting my switches with 10 gigabit Ethernet. Because I feel if I can get more bandwidth to the switch, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of bottleneck there, but that's going to give a full, just a full boost to those workstations because I'm sending 10 gigabit in. I think I'm thinking about this right. It can't hurt to send 10 gigabit out. So we're sending 10 gigabit from our main switching station, and we're sending it out to all of our switching cupboards is what our plans are. At that point, it'll go to 10 gigabit, and then it will break down to 1 gigabit to the workstations. So it should be a lot faster network. What we're also going to have is a lot better connectivity to our wireless units because our wireless units will also handle 1 gigabit. And I already told you about the Meraki. And what makes the Meraki so good? We also have Cisco gear in our network, Cisco Wireless. But what makes the Meraki so good, and it was so appealing to me to buy it, is that the wireless unit, the wireless access point, offloads at the access point. So what does that mean? Well, when you have somebody get on the internet, if you have somebody on a Cisco or there's a couple other companies out there making them, I can't recall them right now. But if you have a controller in your rack that controls all your wireless, the way those work is all of your wireless units, let's say, for instance, if you have 40 wireless access points, all those wireless units talk back through your network and they go back to that controller. That controller then says what they can do, what they can't do, da da da. At that point, that controller goes through a Cat5 cable or maybe a fiber optics cable, and it connects into another switch, and then it feeds everything. There's a huge bottleneck right there, and I know these wireless companies are really good at what they do, but there is a bottleneck. What we found with the Meraki stuff is everything just jumped through the roof when we started using the Meraki. And there's other companies out there like Meraki you can look at, but their radios are just dead sound. Matter of fact, I showed a gentleman one time, one of my colleagues, because on Meraki you can see how many users are on each access point. And he's seen on my one access point, we had 370 some concurrent users at that moment. He said, Jack, if I had that many users on my wireless box, it would fall the ceiling. How do you do that? Well, very simply put, it offloads it right there. So that access point is operating independently from the other access points. Even though they all have the same SID, they all can have the same authentication and everything, because you're going through that cloud-based controller, but everything is acting independently on your network. So when people are on that 370 users, whatever, they are going straight out to the internet at that point, basically. And, you know, there's one or two hops, I'm sure, through switches, but then they're going straight to the internet. That's what you don't have with that controller on that back end. That controller will start to slow you down as you add more and more people. Because let's just say now, instead of 370 people on one access point shooting out of my network, let's say the old way, 40 access points with 300 people times 40, and you're pushing them all through one controller, bottleneck, big bottleneck, and you're going to have a lot of problems. I know we did. So if you're thinking about upgrading your wireless, look at Meraki. I tried to get them to sponsor the show, but you know what? I don't even look for sponsors anymore. I want to tell you folks what we use, what's tried and true, and what works. And if I'm happy with it, then I know you'll be happy with it too. And you'll say, hey, I listen to tips from the server room because, you know, Jack gives me some good ideas and stuff to use out there. So anyway, folks, that is about it with the networking. That's the stuff to look at if you want to go to 10 gigabit networking. I mean, it's very, very easy to do. Just make sure, one, your switches are handwidth. Two, you have 50 micron cable. Single mode would be better than double mode or multi-mode. But if you have multi-mode, it will still do it. Just make sure it's 50 micron and you'll be fine on that aspect. And you can go up to 10 gigabit Ethernet. Remember, my key thoughts tonight is you'll never use less bandwidth. If you want to use that in one of your budgeting meetings with maybe you have a CEO or you have a board that you're budgeting with, make sure that they know you'll never use less. Today's technology, the way our networks are talking, the way data travels through the network, the way people are using file sharing, the way people are using, oh man, these internet resources, folks, just crush our network. I'm talking about Dropbox, OneDrive, iCloud, all that stuff will crush your network. And now with if you're in education and you're using Google and you're using Chromebooks, you better be ready. I know we built the back end before we ever introduced a Chromebook in the network, because you got to have that network ready to run before you introduce all that traffic. And you have, you know, if you have, let's say even if you have a small school you're working with or a college, and you have 1,000 Chromebooks. That's 1,000 people accessing Google Docs and Google Drive on your network all day long. It's going to take a beating. And I always say, if it's going to take a licking, make sure it keeps on ticking. That's our job. You don't want your phone to ring and say, this connection's slow, this internet's not running right, these things won't log on. You don't want that, folks. That's bad news. Gives you a bad reputation in your network as the network administrator. Keep up on things, keep reevaluating your network, and keep building it. Also, remember this little bit of information I'm giving you. You'll never use less storage. So if you have a backup server and it's going to go out and it's a terabyte server and it's getting close to being full, buy an 8 terabyte server, buy a 4 terabyte server, because more is better. People do not store less stuff. And people don't clean their old stuff out. Just the fact of life. Folks, I want to thank you so much for listening to this podcast, for downloading it, subscribing to the show. I know I'm very humbled every week when I look at the numbers. And, you know, you see, you know, anywhere from 2,000 to 2,500 people downloading this show. listening to it on all these different channels we have now with the tech podcast, you know, with Stitcher. I mean, the numbers are staggering, folks, and thank you so much for listening. Each week it makes it more enjoyable for me to write these shows and to bring this content to you. I really do, you know, appreciate you listening and paying attention to the shows. Like every podcaster, I'm kind of one of those guys, Marge said, you just love a pat on the back. Yeah, we do. We love a pat on the back. It's always a good thing. And that pat on the back is telling us, hey, Jack, you're doing a good job, man. I've received emails from some people just said, thanks, man, for doing what you do. You know, I listen to you in the car. I pick up some good tips and some tricks from you. And that's what it's all about, being a podcaster. Now, we don't do this to be a millionaire. That's why I got to keep my day job, right? Because I'm not a millionaire podcaster. I do this because I enjoy paying it forward and giving you a little bit of my knowledge and sharing with you. But I do ask that you share your knowledge back, right? Pick up that phone sometimes. Call that number, the 724-701-0550. Leave me a voicemail. Say, Jack, this is what I do on my network, man. Hey, this is how we evaluate our wireless. This is what wireless gear we used. Let me get you on the show. It helps me because I told my wife I was coming upstairs. I said, okay, honey, got to go upstairs and talk for an hour. She said, you won't have any problem at all because she knows I'm a talker. But it's nice to have your voicemails in there so I can play them on the air, you know. And, you know, just do your very best. Record the very best way you can. I mean, with that number, you can even call me on a cell phone. I mean, it will sound fine. It will be okay. Or drop me an email and say, Jack, this is what I do, and I'll read it on the air. That's what we look to do as podcasters, sharing information between each other in a very, very easy-to-use social manner. What I mean about that, you don't have to read this. Right now, you may be listening in the car. Hey, watch that outside there. Well, hey, red light. Careful. Hey, watch the old lady pushing the stroller across the road. That might be her grandbaby. Oh, never mind. You know what I mean. So pay attention to the road, but listen to the show. Folks, I want to ask you, being the holiday season and you're buying Christmas gifts anywhere, use my Amazon link. I tell you this every week and every month I get this great little email from Amazon that says, well, Jack, thanks for supplying people with the Amazon link, but you know what? You didn't even make the minimum quota to get a check. So they send me nothing. They do send me an email every month, and that's kind of nice that they send me an email to say I didn't do well. So we're trying to do well. We're trying to promote Amazon. We're trying to promote the show. It doesn't cost you anything. Just go to my website, tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Shut off your ad blocker. Deactivate it. You won't get bombarded. I don't have a bunch of stuff on there. And click on the Amazon ad and do that every time you buy everything from Amazon. Anything. If you buy washcloths from Amazon, use that link because a couple pennies come back to the show and every penny matters. It helps. Like I said, I got new fiber coming. Had to contract that. It wasn't the cheapest in the world to get it here, but we made some good deals. And you know what? It's going to be better bandwidth. And hopefully I can start producing these shows more of a live show, more of a, maybe not even live, but at least be able to pump some HD video out. That's my dream. So, but we need money to pay for that. And that's a great way to do it. Folks, if you're out there and you're thinking, man, this guy kind of knows what he's talking about. You know, he knows a lot about Windows servers and networks. You probably want to take one of my courses. And you can learn about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi Server from install to administration. Yep, install to administration. So you can be an administrator of Windows Server, be a server admin. It's a great life, right? You can sign up for one of these if you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look at the online class link at the top of the page. Folks, many employers out there have paid for these for their employees. So go to your boss and say, look, I want to have some continuing education. They're going to say, wow, that's wonderful. You know, you may have to use your own time in the evenings to watch the videos, take a short quiz. But you know what? It's going to be rewarding to your company because now you're going to know more. And that's what companies want you to do. Besides, folks, right now, if you have any 2003 servers, you know we're getting ready to migrate. So you want to know how to run 2008 R2. Or I would suggest if you're migrating from 2003, go to 2012 would be my suggestion. Don't stop in the middle. Go all the way. But that course is available also. Once again, once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate in the mail. You can show your employer and they'll say, hey, wonderful. Good job, Bob. I'm glad you went to that course. What do you know? And you'll say, blah, 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 blah. And they'll go, yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about, Bob. But good deal. I'm glad you're learning more. Once again, sign up for that at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. You won't be disappointed. There's been hundreds and hundreds of students going through these courses, and I've got nothing but positive feedback. So I know they're working for people out there. And if you're looking for a job, that certificate can only help you. It can't hurt you to have more education. Have a great work week, everybody. And I will be talking to you next Tuesday night here for another show. Take care, my friends. I'll see you then. Bye. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.